Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
My name is Velocity Child, and we are here on Fallen Woman at Radio Free Brooklyn. And I'm with an incredibly esteemed guest this evening, full of stories and experience. Linda Simpson, hello.
Well, hello, Velocity. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my second time
on your show.
Yes, yes. True. But this is our first time mano a mano.
See.
Yes. I like them both. Mm-hmm. So you are the bingo queen of New York City.
Well, that's one way of describing me. But I do host bingo as my livelihood. I'm a game show hostess. Mm-hmm. And so every Friday and Saturday at Le Poisson Rouge down on Bleecker Street, I host
a beautiful venue.
Yeah, we're in the smaller of the two rooms.
Okay.
But it's still a great place to work. I really enjoy it. You know how like most nightclubs are shady?
Yeah.
LPR is not. It's like a fantastic place to work. That's why I've been there quite a while now.
Oh, wow.
Because the management, the staff, the ownership, everybody's great. And so it's like one of those environments you could look forward to going in and working there.
Yeah.
Which is so rare in nightclub land.
Yes, yes it is.
You know? So, and no one's like watching over my shoulder, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, it makes for a really great work atmosphere. But I do host bingo, and what's interesting is because I've been doing this quite a while, bingo, is I have learned a lot of like game show skills, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, some of it's just basic showbiz. You know, but part of what I'm coming from like a gay background where it was like my first performances were at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday. I had a night at the Pyramid to a, you know, completely gay crowd practically. And it was real bitchy drag queen humor. But
yeah.
Now I'm doing 7:30 to 9:30 on weekends. And the crowd's much more straight, not mm-hmm. just heterosexual, but you know,
right.
A little more conventional than I am used to, so I had to really make an adjustment over the years. But it's been really good. It's been good training to work for a lot of different audiences.
Well, not just that, but it really flexes your wild sense of humor.
Yes. The only thing is I feel like I'm kind of like unskilled right now, or at least a little bit green, with performing with other drag queens. You know? Like on a more conversational, you know.
Right.
Way. So I do
improv, riffing with
yeah,
others.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. So that's why I wouldn't mind performing with I do have a drag queen spokesmodels and burlesque girl spokesmodels, but we don't talk. They're more like, you know,
right.
Vanna White's.
Okay, yes, yes.
So
they're for presentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I do learn, but I'm much more friendly and sort of like over the top gregarious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that way, but I still have sort of a, you know, I don't know, a wry sense of humor, even though I think I'm being completely serious.
Right.
People interpret what I'm saying. I think it's my tone of voice as being a little sarcastic.
Yes, you scared me for years.
Did I really?
Yeah, I found you very.
Because of my voice?
Your demeanor.
But Velocity, I feel like I'm a friendly person.
You are. You're very friendly. But when you're in a commanding authoritarian position, and maybe this is because you're a Scorpio as well, and I've been told this about myself,
uh-huh.
and I'm always surprised to hear it.
Uh-huh.
I got accused of being very aloof and
uh-huh.
bitchy for years, but
uh-huh.
really I was just introspective and shy and withdrawn.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when you have that nature and then you're in a presentation authoritative position,
mm-hmm.
it can be very intimidating.
Yeah.
Also, you're just,
yeah.
you've got these wisecracks that are really whip smart,
mm.
and you convey to me, at least now still, I would not want to get into an argument with you.
Well, but that being said, you know, your story resonates with me because when I first came out of the drag scene, I feel like it was very nerdy, you know?
Really?
And like, yes. And I was very intimidated by almost everybody.
Really?
And so I was okay. I kind of was like a, I felt kind of natural on stage, so I didn't have to go through that awkward period on stage, I feel. Like, I took to the stage pretty quickly. But just interacting with people and, like, being intimidated by other people was a major, like, part of my early drag life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, it wasn't until, like, and I feel like a lot of people who were really nice, they probably thought I was snotty, but I was just very intimidated by them.
Yeah.
You know? And
we have to hold your own some way.
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I did that too. I understand, especially like if you're not from New York City. Too, I think there's a sense that you have to put up a little extra protective shield.
It's true.
So you can compete with all the hard-boiled folk who have that innately in them.
When I moved to New York, you know, a million years ago, from Minnesota, where everyone's like Minnesota nice, I was really, I thought that a lot of New Yorkers were being very angry when I interacted with them, but I came to realize, no, that's just kind of like the New York way of interacting with people, where it's much more direct and blunt. And
It's
not like in Minnesota where you have to say, like, you know, have a good day or, you know, but have a 5-minute conversation that goes along with that, too. So it's like, in New York, it's just like, I like that, though. It's much easier to read than...
It's more honest.
Yeah. Minnesota can be very passive-aggressive in many ways,
too. I grew up in Southern California. I completely concur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like growing up in Southern California, if someone said... How are you today? If you said anything other than,
fine.
Oh, I'm fine, you got looked at like you had three heads, like you were crying, like something was wrong with you. If you're like, I've had a shit day.
Right.
You couldn't say that in Southern California. It was considered inappropriate.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But in New York City, if someone's having a shitty day, they'll fucking tell
you.
Even if you don't ask.
Well, I think a lot of New Yorkers can be rude on the streets of New York as you're interacting with people in the subway, especially. However, New Yorkers on the whole...
But you don't have road rage like you do in L.A. I think that's the balance there.
Road rage, I would think, would be a lot more dangerous than a shove on the subway.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, unless it's in front of the train.
Well, that's true. Let me take that back.
There's been some who have befallen the...
Well, I get sidewalk rage, though, once in a while.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that? Because I'm a fast walker on the streets of New York City.
Oh.
And I live right by Times Square.
Yeah.
So there's all these meandering, you know, tourists. And it's so frustrating. I mean, any New Yorker would tell you their frustrations about tourists sometimes. And I'm not going to be... You know,
Midtown's
too high.
A
nightmare. Yeah, and I don't want to be too high and mighty about it because I moved from somewhere else to come to New York. I was a tourist once too, but
I think you were a newcomer.
Yes,
that's
thank
different.
You. And even back then, I knew to sort of like
acclimate.
Yeah, or give New Yorkers the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So it's like very like discouraging.
I have a visual fantasy that pops into my head when I'm trapped in a. When I'm trapped in, like, human gridlock.
Oh, really?
When you're trapped, like, in Midtown or Garment District or Times Square, and people are just not getting the fuck out of the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this visual fantasy of just, I don't know, I just turn to, like, some sort of super giant. I just start literally kicking human being bodies, and bodies go flying, and I kick them out of the way.
Woo, Valesia, I'm not inviting you over.
It's how
you might start kicking my neighbors.
It's how I get the frustration out while I'm trapped in human gridlock. I just
it is kind of a good visualization.
Myself kicking them out of the way like a Godzilla. Yeah.
Right. No, I know what you mean. And like I said, I don't want to be a snob or, you know, cruel to anybody. But there is kind of a way of, like, maneuvering the New York City streets that you have to adhere to.
It's almost like when you have to get through a busy nightclub.
Yes.
That's its own skill, too.
Yes,
right?
It really is, especially if you're holding a drink, you know?
Yes.
Right, no, it's so true. I love it. I love it when someone's smart enough that you're with to grab your hand.
Yes, of course. You know? Always do that.
No, and it's so bonding, too. I love that, like, you know, walking through hand in hand in a nightclub.
Girl. Yeah. Yes. We're going to make it through this motley crowd.
But I got to admit, it was mostly people grabbing my hand. I guess I wasn't savvy enough to do that, you know?
What's one of your techniques to get through a really crowded room when you're...
You know what it is sometimes? You act like you're kind of dancing. And yeah. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so if you're kind of like, make it look like you're, hey, I'm just going through you.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, get out of my way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are more prone to move out of the way if you're sort of happy.
I do that too. And I incorporate my tits with that also.
Oh, good one.
Because I know I'm already going to be a little scantily clad because I'm at a nightclub or I'm wearing something, you know, mm-hmm. loose. Mm-hmm. And this bump, ooh, ooh. And you make that little sound like, ooh,
ha, party.
Excuse me, come through. And I make this little sound, and people turn around like, what? And it's such a perky little sound. And it's high-pitched enough. It usually goes over the music, and they're like,
oh, I
tits.
Love it.
It's like, whoop, it's sort of like a Marilyn Monroe-y method I try to utilize. Because it's dark enough, they're not scared of me right away.
Good for you for using what you've got.
Yeah.
What God gave you.
Yeah, and the jiggly dance thing, too. That helps a lot.
Oh, in a little titty gossip.
Yeah.
Shelley Watson, another rather buxom burlesque girl, works for me as a spokesmodel at Bingo sometimes.
Oh.
And she got $100 tip. And I said, Shelley, how'd you get that? And she goes, I you know, they were like from Europe. And she goes, I just play, you know, that. I just showed my boobs a lot. You know what I mean? And really, like, did it. But she's so good at that, about being playful with her boobs.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
She is hilarious.
When they're that big and people just randomly bump into them all the time. And you get so many apologies. It's so funny. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, and I'm like, shh. Dude, it happens all the time.
Well, my serious question. You know,
domain practically when I'm out. crowded nightclub?
I have a question pertaining to this, though.
Yes.
Do you think now with the Me Too movement and this heightened awareness of, you know, sexual abuse, that will affect the burlesque scene somehow?
It has already.
Has it?
Yeah.
How so?
Honestly, I felt it happening in the burlesque community over the last 2 years, 2.5 years.
Felt like a Me Too movement?
A Me Too movement was already happening within the burlesque community.
Uh-huh.
With some male performers and certain producers being called out.
Uh-huh.
Like before the Weinstein, before the Cosby.
And do you think deservedly so?
Yeah, in most cases, but not all.
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel a bit of a witch hunt vibe going down with it. I felt that there was some bandwagon or gang mentality happening as well. And it's a shame because it's an important issue and it's sad to see it being corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of feel the same way now with the Me Too. I mean, I just got to say this. I find it painfully bizarre that all the people being called out right now are liberal comedians. You know, and then I makes think of Kathy Griffin. And it just feels like really, all the liberal comedians, those guys are the ones who are already like on my side with my rights for my body. Those guys are the only ones with a history of any kind of misconduct.
Right.
I find that startling, and it makes me think of McCarthy, and it brings up those issues too.
Because it doesn't seem to be this equal amount of like Me Too movement among right wingers.
Yeah,
you know?
It just feels it's something's afoot.
Interesting. Well, it's unfortunate, whatever the case may be, that the Me Too movement has to be tarnished in any ways. And it's moving so rapidly that who knows, it might think completely different next week. But I think...
I just hate such an important issue being targeted against people who are already actually in support
of
the rights to my body. Why are they the only one? And then it's so important, and it's the mudslinging going on with it. The Aziz is where I draw the line.
The accusations against him rang hollow.
If you have a bad date or you are a bad date, I don't think you deserve all of that.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
And also, like, she got off with like publishing anonymously complaint against
him. I'm not surprised because it's kind of dubious in the first place. Why would they release her name?
Well, she showed text, I guess, that proved at least that they had some communication. But really, it is like just her word, you know?
Yeah.
So it is a little bit suspect in some ways.
Did you read his... reply to all of that?
I thought his reply was very dignified.
Me too. I thought so as well. Yeah. I was impressed, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was... he didn't attack her by any means, and it wasn't a complete denial, but no, it was just how would you... Yeah, it was a mature way of dealing with sort of a hysterical... Not hysterical, that's too harsh a word.
Right.
But a suspect... You know what I mean? Accusation.
And I don't want to be jaded or hard-boiled because I was a sex worker for a decade. And I mean, God, when I think about Louis C.K.'s scenario, it called to mind, it made me ask myself, how many men have I watched jerk off in mm-hmm. my lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
I've lost count.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I never did the jerking off, but in a lot of the sessions I had, that was the end, how the session would end, you know? You would, as a dominatrix, you'd make them masturbate, and that was the point. And then I was a phone sex operator. I can't tell you how many times I've heard a guy jerk off over the phone.
This interview is
head spin.
Ending. Now, I didn't realize I was talking to a pervert.
Yeah. You are. But it didn't kill my dreams. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe the difference would be that that was an occupation for you as opposed to them not...
Well, for me, it was more survival. It wasn't like a...
Oh, I hear you. But maybe, yeah. But still, it was an environment where you might expect to see a man's penis.
Yeah,
where these
yeah.
other
but
women
I gotta tell
were
you, there's many times where I didn't expect to see a man's penis, and I did.
I hear you.
And I have so many bad dates, or just, oof.
Oh.
Did I fuck that guy? What happened? Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. Shelley Watson and I actually had a conversation about this not long ago. And she was just sort of like, oh my God, walk it off. She's like, that's called being a woman. Like, what?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the reality. And the interesting thing is with the Me Too...
Mm-hmm.
It's as if no one's ever heard of this before. Like, it's some new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
SNL did a great sketch on it, sort of a Spice Girls music video.
Oh, did they?
All about how, like, hi, guys, this has been going on for centuries. How is this news? How mm-hmm. is this? Yeah.
That's funny. Well, a good friend of mine, who I will not name, mm-hmm. Said... who's a woman, who happens to be a woman, said that, yeah, like, if, like, having a penis flashed at you traumatizes you for the rest of your life, you probably weren't a pretty strong, a very strong person to begin with, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Anything would have set you off, you know?
Yeah, like Dave Chappelle called it having a brittle soul.
Very. Well, exactly.
Very easily.
Exactly. And also, like, my friend, again... Has,
and all this is happening in the age of the dick pic phenomenon. Isn't that funny? Like, dick pics,
yeah.
It's so common.
Yeah.
How many times I've just been sitting down to dinner out in public with somebody, having a nice casual conversation, and then the penis is there. It is on my phone, and it's like
this is like phenomenon.
What a contradiction. The Me Too.
Exactly.
Maybe it's a backlash to the dick pics.
It might be. I mean, if not specifically just the the dick pic mentality.
How do you feel about getting a dick pic?
I'm not really turned on by it at all. You know what I mean? I have to see what it's attached to.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not that I can't admire a good cock, but most of them, after a while, it's numbing. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, you get dead to it.
Yeah. So, I really need... Granted, that can...
It's a bit presumptuous, too, I find.
Yeah. Yeah. So, not that if... Maybe if it was accompanied by some other photos, like it's one of a series.
Right, like a torso, a nice little face
ears,
shot.
Nose.
You know, lips. Personality,
mm-hmm.
pheromones.
Yeah, really, exactly.
That's what I think is missing in the whole dating age right now. The internet, Tinder, Grindr, Thrinder thing.
Keep going.
Nobody, I know too much. Yeah. You know. Nobody, I've tried them. Not Grindr, though. Don't think I'd be welcome there. But think that people are forgetting about pheromones.
Good point.
I mean, what is it that really attracts people together?
Yeah.
You know, like draws them together? It's chemistry. It's pheromones.
Yeah.
You can't get that swiping left or right.
That's very true. That's very true. Because so much of what you're talking about, too, doesn't have to do with physical attraction or necessarily
energy.
Yeah. So in all of course you're seeing on your phone is a person's, you know, best looking photo. You
yeah,
know?
They've probably photoshopped.
Yeah, they've thought about it a lot at least, you know? So it's nothing wrong with that per se, but you're right. It's not the same at all.
No. And I've tried it. It's, and then they show up, and yes, they may look like their picture, but you don't resonate with their smell.
Most of my tranny chasing life was
tranny chasing. Fine.
Well, tranny, you know.
Anyone listening?
Oh, okay, you're right. I'm saying rather. This is very important information. But tranny, a tranny chaser. I'm using sort of an old fashioned word, I guess, at this point.
It's okay.
You know, is a man who usually almost always identified as heterosexual, but is attracted sexually to gender variance. You know,
right.
To some degree. Some are after boom transsexual. Some like. You know, anything that's feminine. But most all my encounters were done, you know, in bars and clubs.
Right.
You know, or on the street, for God's sakes, where you had to meet people. You know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't done, it was pre-internet. But there was such a, like, I think more of a charge situation when those things occurred.
Yeah.
That they can be replicated, you know, digitally, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm really like old school when it comes to like, I think, meeting people, you know? I've done those apps and stuff like that and met people, you know, online and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was just a little mechanical.
Always. It's never felt natural.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, mechanical.
Yeah.
A bit dissociative.
Yeah.
I would say there's
we're playing our roles.
Yeah. It loses that completely organic feel.
Right.
I feel like millennials are missing out on that. I also feel like they're missing out on the power of the written word.
Amen. Yeah.
Writing by hand is so...
Yeah.
As a witch, it's the most powerful way to write because you're feeling it with your body as you're moving the pen on the paper.
Uh-huh.
You know, and pen and paper just
I actually thought you were referring first to reading books, but you're right. But you're right. Writing is such a vital form.
Yes, it is. When I create, it's really, I can't type a story. I feel so weird doing that. And I type emails all the time. Of course I can type, but typing out, a real story from my life feels so... Or a poem, or when I write a song, I need my hand for that, because that's connected to my brain. It's an emotion.
It's a physical act, too.
You're connected to that writing so much more than you just type it.
That's very interesting. I do most of my writing, I will say, on a laptop or a computer. But I do write notes to myself a lot. You know what I mean? And
well,
I find
that's where it all comes from.
Yeah, and I find that's important. You know? And sometimes I'll think of something, I'll jot something down. But I rarely use my phone to jot things down. I almost always do it on pen and paper.
I have texted myself a few times.
Me too. Oh, definitely. I'll do that, of course. Yeah, of course.
Also, it's really a friend of mine, Faceboy, talks about his like a saying called "Go text yourself."
Don't text yourself.
No, go text yourself.
Oh, go text yourself.
Kind of like go fuck yourself, but it's called go text yourself. In the sense that if you're really angry at somebody, instead of texting them, text yourself first, and then read it the next day before you send it.
Very good idea. Yeah. A very good idea. That's like writing a letter to someone when you're angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set it aside and you go look at it. And that physical act of just writing the letter was like the release.
Cathartic.
But you would never want to send it in that raw form.
Right.
Well, rarely would you want to send it in that raw
form. If you want to still be friends with the person,
Right. Have you done that? Ever been too like blunt with a friend rather than tempered?
Of course.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a Scorpio. I've got five of my planets in Scorpio.
Oh, I don't know if I'm that heavy, but I'm Scorpio too.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Leo rising, a Sag moon, so I'm surrounded by fire.
Oh.
Sheesh. And my Mars is in the house of communication, so.
Oh.
There has been some time.
What does that mean, if your house is in the Mars?
Well, Mars is a very assertive planet.
Uh-huh.
Very alpha, very aggressive war god.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in my house of communication.
Mm.
Fortunately, though, for me, I've got Libra there. So it tempers the assertive nature of the way I can communicate. So sometimes I mean the nicest thing and it might come across like, volatile, and I didn't mean for it to. Or then there's other times if my emotions are just in a whirlwind, I just, you know... I have definitely stepped in it or put my foot in my mouth. You must have, but you're a Scorpio.
You know a lot more than I do. I mean, I have a loyalty to my sign, and I enjoy being a Scorpio. And I kind of instinctually know some common, characteristics, but I'm not as knowledgeable about you as you.
But have you ever, put your foot in your mouth, or...
Oh, God.
He's always so composed.
No, but you know what? I sort of push things sometimes, like humor-wise.
Uh-huh.
Or you know what I mean? I think things are funny and they're not.
Have you ever had like a nightmare heckler?
I'm not so much as... Have I ever had... No. I can't think of a nightmare heckler, but I've had some bad audience members.
Oh,
you know?
I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah. No, some people, you can't please them, you know, no matter what.
They showed up to be pissed.
Yeah, they did. And see, my philosophy, actually, and I've learned this over the years, especially with my game show abilities, but if they made an effort to see you, if they, got out of their house, which is no easy task these days with all the phone distractions, went to a club, paid a cover, perhaps, paid for something, at least they bought drinks, they made an effort to see you. So my philosophy is I'm going to be grateful by trying to make you have an enjoyable experience, or at least an experience that you went out of the house for.
Right.
But some people, that when they go out, audience members like that, some audience members are hateful.
Yeah.
It's like 1%. I find like 99% of the audience is usually, you know what I mean, good or willing to, like, you know what I mean?
When I was a stripper a long time ago, I remember 5% of the people, about roughly, if I were to...
5% is probably higher. I'm probably more accurate.
5% in strip clubs of the men have come there to deliberately insult the strippers.
Okay.
They're there to get out their frustration.
Yeah. They're misogynistic?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're there deliberately.
Yeah.
They're paying you to insult you.
Yep.
And I'm sure you've come across that.
There's some people that do that with drag shows. It's mostly fags. I hate to say that, but you know what I mean? Yes.
Wow.
But that being said, some straight people, even in this day and age, are very drag phobic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I get it. If like a drag thing isn't your style, I kind of get it. But some people are beyond like even liking the aesthetic of what that person's doing.
Yes.
They just don't like that it's drag. Right. You know? So... Not as common in the circles that I'm traveling, you know, or performing on, but you still get some people like that. Because, like I said, I get, like at my bingos, I get sort of a, you know, straighter crowd sometimes. So I'll get people from the suburbs and sometimes who are dragged there with their girlfriends or something like that, you know, some like, you know, Neanderthal guy. And like I said, I try to make him happy, you know?
Yeah.
So I like being democratic.
Right.
You know, with a small D towards the audience. You know? But there's definitely some bitches in the audiences. I hope I've never been like that for an audience.
I can't imagine. Like I said, you're always very composed.
Well,
you don't seem like an ups. Like,
I think you see me only.
I have seen you on your good side.
I get very frantic sometimes, though, too. So I especially like if it's like in a busy, my bingos can be very busy. So to like run around and try to like, you know, it's like being, you know, hostess at a restaurant or a club or anything, you know, where you have to like attune to a lot of different types of people.
Right. Yeah, you have to exchange.
But I enjoy it. It keeps me on my feet. I'm no spring chicken, honey. And and to have a job that keeps me alert is very good.
Well, I recently saw you on television described as a historian.
Oh, did you see that show? What was it called?
The 1980s, the deadliest decade?
Yes.
Yes.
I was on this series called, what was it called again?
I think it's the 1980s, the deadliest decade.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So it was a case about this.
And it's murder porn, folks.
Yeah.
It really extreme murder porn from the 80s.
And it's one of those kind of shows called where it's a lot of talking heads sort of doing, you know, carrying the investigation along.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. And so it was
Michael Musto was on that show.
Yes. It was an interesting case that occurred like very early 80s of a transgender woman. I don't think they even used the word transgender back then.
Who was also like quite the model.
Yeah.
Too. Like,
very beautiful.
Legit professional model. Very,
she had really that look of that time. Very like disco chic.
Yeah, like Gia.
Yeah, exactly. And so she, unfortunately, horribly, was murdered by probably, I don't want to give anything away, but the people that she was...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, the people that she was
died.
With were all suspects. You know, every one of them.
Yeah, there was all these people in her life that could have been the
one. Yeah. And so sad in that way because she, and it was also happening in Westchester, so it gave it this seamy effect. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't even New York City, but it was, you know, Westchester where the suburbs can be even weirder than the city.
Yes, like a David Lynch movie.
Yes, exactly.
It was very David Lynch story, actually.
Yes. Yes, exactly, because there was no clear cut ending.
Yeah, it was one of the better episodes, I have to say, and because I am a murder porn fan.
Do you ever watch Reels, R-E-E-L-Z, that channel? They've got tons of stuff like that. It's not murder so much, but like about celebrities and stuff, but a lot of, you know, scandals.
Where they go in depth.
Well, yeah, so it's like Anna Nicole Smith or, you know what I mean, George Michael and all these poor people that, you know what I mean, have sort of tragic endings.
I felt bad for Anna.
So did I.
I feel like she's murdered, to be honest.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Who would be murdering Anna? And you can say this right now as we're being recorded.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, I'm supposed to say the opinions and what have yous of Fallen Woman do not reflect the opinions of Radio Free Brooklyn.
But they do reflect mine. Oh, really good.
I have to slip that in there.
That was good how you did that. That's much more interesting if you slip it in the middle of the show than rather than, you know, the beginning. Because now we all have to listen to what it actually means.
I said it. I meant it, folks. Yeah. No, this is just my silly opinion, so don't go crazy, everybody. But Howard Stern, her husband.
What's that?
Her husband, Howard Stern.
Her husband?
Yeah, not the Howard Stern.
Oh,
This jackass, his name was Howard Stern.
Oh, of course. Yes, exactly. His name was Howard Stern.
Creepy guy. I think he did.
Well, but I think he had a... Don't you think Anna and him really had a true relationship? You don't think so?
I think they did, and I think it was truly toxic.
Oh, all right. Well, he was so invested in Anna that he kind of, like, was weird in that he was living so vicariously through her.
Right.
You know?
There's this sort of pathology going on, in my opinion. And then also he's administering... Mm-hmm. Some of the drugs and stuff.
And do you remember Anna had just had a baby?
Yes.
And then he claimed that he was the father, but then they did paternity tests and he wasn't.
And then the son died. Or her son died also.
Yeah, the son died before she herself died. And that really put her on like a downward track.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah. I learned all of this on Reels TV. Anyways, I enjoyed being
that episode by Foe folks was called The Death of Disco on the 1980s.
Thank you.
Decade.
And the thing is, too, is like I didn't really know anything about the case because it was much, I mean, even
but
though.
But you were there as a historian.
Yeah, but I'm no spring, like I said, I'm no spring chicken, but I wasn't knowledgeable about this murder case in the early 80s in Westchester, you know?
No.
And so, but it was interesting going on because it made me realize, of course, like all reality TV is kind of a, you know, a gimmick and everyone's got stage acts. When I was being interviewed by a very, very admirable woman, she was very good at what she was doing.
You look great, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. She kept asking me the same questions over and over, but she was so charming about it.
Oh.
And she had, like, said to me, too, I'll be asking a lot of the same stuff.
Oh.
But they're just looking for that perfect sound bite, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And after a while, you're, like, you're actually getting a little impatient.
I'm sure it feels like an interrogation at that point.
And you feel like, do they think I'm dumb? Like, I said that 1,000 times before, you know? But they just want you to say, my big line was like, you know, her body was found in the Hudson River, you know? And they just want for me to keep saying, I think, something until I have something that they can easily fit into their script.
Did you like, have a nightmare that night where somebody whispered in your ear, like, her body was found in the Hudson River?
I did. Which makes me think that I wasn't disrespectful to anybody. You know, including that poor murdered transgender person whose name I can't remember. But I didn't pretend like I tried to know her. You know, so I had no guilty conscience.
have you brought your historian to other platforms?
Well, good point. I don't... you know what? The thing is, too... Historian seems to me sort of old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, here comes the old historian. Or so I don't want to like reject the label necessarily because it is an honor.
Yeah.
You know, and I do have a history with the drag community now, and I've got this photo collection, you know, called the Drag Explosion, where about my photos that I took back in the 80s and 90s. But I feel like I'm still want to be considered a bit artist or contemporary person showing this stuff or talking about what I have to talk about rather than like, you know, rather than like everybody gather around me and I shall tell you of what it used to be. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
I hear you, but I don't want to sound too self-important either because I know a lot of older people that can be very, like, off-putting.
Right.
Because they can be, like, they know it all. And if you try to kind of interject something, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. Not all old people. I find most elderly people actually to be very open-minded. But some people are like that, where they use the age thing as sort of a...
Right, crutch.
You know, yeah, kind of a badge of honor that's a little obnoxious.
So they're milking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm not quite there yet. Give me a few years.
I'm starting to feel that way a little bit, but not in a bad way.
Well, there's a good way of imparting wisdom.
Yeah.
And there's a good way of sounding like you're a cranky old, you know, broad. You know what I mean?
I think the experience and the wisdom is what's important, not the...
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm encouraged, too, though, that I do meet a lot of younger people, though, that are very open to that. In fact, they crave it. You know what I mean? To learn about what became before them,
yeah,
or like learn some life lessons.
And find out more about the history.
So that's why I don't want to demean my historical aspect either.
I think it's grand.
But at the same time, thank you, but I don't want to overplay it.
Right.
You know, I want to be a little bit historian / whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to just being, you know, that my only topic. Can you imagine?
No. That's so not you.
I'll go, that reminds me of 1987.
There'll come a day, though, where you'll, you know, take the teeth out of the jar and pop them in your mouth and say that very sentence.
I like that analogy.
1987.
That's hilarious. That's funny. Well, you know what movie I saw? If I may bring up a movie subject.
Please, I love films.
Blade Runner 2049. Did you see it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, let's have a conversation.
Okay.
Did you see Blade Runner, the original?
Oh, many times.
I'm such a fan.
I've seen both versions.
I'm a big fan. Now, I actually went into Blade Runner 2049. I only saw it a few weeks ago, so several months after it was released.
Ah.
And I had a chip on my shoulder a little. But I felt it was not too bad. I felt like they were very reverential towards the old Blade Runner. I felt like some of the special effects, like, I'm not amazed by, like, you know, fighting and, like, ray guns and stuff.
I thought the whole Sean Young moment was...
Oh, I thought it was gorgeous.
Spoilers, sorry, guys.
Oh, all right, yes.
But she makes an appearance, and the way they did it was...
Yeah,
flawless.
That was... I thought it was beautiful.
Harrison Ford, for me, stole the show.
I think he's great. See, a lot of people complain about the early Blade Runner because they didn't like Harrison Ford.
I
think he's fantastic.
He's amazing.
And I'm not like a Harrison Ford fanatic by any means.
No, but I've never seen him do anything I didn't like.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I should check him out more.
I've liked him in everything he's ever done.
Well, did you like the movie, Blade Runner 2049? It seemed like you were hesitant.
I am.
And tell me why, please.
I
might not deny it.
There's only one reason that I have a reservation about it.
Okay.
You see, it's aesthetically beautiful. So don't get what I'm about to say wrong. There's just a quote Rev. Jim Miller once said that when art loses its aesthetic value, it also loses its political value.
Good point.
Yeah, and although the movie is incredibly beautiful and aesthetic, it lost some aesthetic value for me when it was just jacking off over its aesthetic value constantly.
That's an interesting point.
There was
valid.
Long silence.
But you know what? But sometimes
screenshots.
But Velocity, in some ways, I thought that it was a very confident film that it went at a slow pace. And it almost, to me, seemed like... Because so many of those sequels can be rushed, kind of like, let's just put together something, you know?
Right.
So I sort of like the way that this was a little studied. I get it, though. I do get what you're saying.
There's just a few moments that really...
Yeah, I even had those feelings myself.
Yeah. Other than that, I really enjoyed it. Ryan? Is that the lead actor's name?
Oh, yeah. What's his name?
Constantine?
Yeah. Isn't that funny? We don't know.
It's
like Ryan Gleason. No.
Ryan
Rafferty. Ryan O'Neill. No, Ryan.
Oh, my God.
Ryan McRyan.
Now, because I can't.
Ryan Child. Ryan Velocity. Ryan Linda Simpson.
Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
I was correct. Okay.
I said
Ryan
Grayson.
Gosling. Yes. He's hot. He was great.
He was good.
Yes, he was. I liked his boss.
Oh, yeah. She was hot.
She was strong.
Oh, that's that woman from, you know who that is. She's
Robin Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what's that TV series?
Princess Bride.
No, she's in that TV series, the one that Kevin Spacey was on.
Oh, I didn't watch that.
We'd be really good at like E! Entertainment. We're like, who is that guy again? Yeah, what was he in? What was she in?
We were old. We smoked too much pot.
We can't find the monitor. Where is it?
Where's the damn ball? what's her lips? Yeah, Robin Wright. I never saw that Kevin Spacey.
Neither did I.
House of Cards.
Yeah.
I never watched it.
By all accounts, it was good.
I have to say, Dave Chappelle made a wonderfully inappropriate joke about Kevin Spacey.
Oh, what did he say?
In his recent Netflix show.
Do you remember what he said?
I don't know it word for word, so I'm not going to get it exact. But it was funny. The whole notion was just wrong and funny, and I could appreciate it. He was the Me Too in regards to that.
Oh my God, I'm loving it already.
he was saying, you know, in his earlier part, talking about like how Hollywood is the most rapey town in the world now. Mm. And he was going off about Harvey Weinstein and then Louis C.K. and he mentioned him by name and went deep into that. And then when he got to Kevin Spacey, he was talking about Donald Trump grabbing him by the pussy and he was like, hell. Mm. Kevin Spacey, he's grabbing boys by the pussy. And then he's saying, you know, that he says, ladies, you're right, you're absolutely right, everybody's right. He's like, but I just have to say that. Why couldn't that boy have spoken out just a few months later so he could have seen the end of House of Cards?
Funny.
I went through that with Pamela Alden.
Pamela Alden?
I think that's her name. Now I'm going to have to Google and make sure I'm not.
Oh, who is Pamela Alden?
On that. Pamela Alden is a comedian, actress.
You like her?
Love her.
Oh, interesting. I don't know her.
I love her. She's got this amazing TV show called Better Things.
Better Things? What's that about?
It's this wonderfully edgy comic.
Like a sitcom?
Heart-wrenching, sort of deep comedic show about a mother, single mom, actress, working actress. Mm-hmm. She has three daughters, a crazy British mom who's drunk all the time. Mm. And it's about how she runs her crazy Hollywood life by the seat of her pants.
Is she like an actress?
Yeah. And she was in one of Louis C.K.'s early sitcoms on HBO called Lucky Louie. She's been in his TV series. And then she got her own spinoff, and he's one of the producers. And I remember when the Louis C.K. scandal broke out, I felt just as shameful as Dave Chappelle about Kevin Spacey.
Oh.
Because I thought, oh, no. The season finale for Better Things is next week. I have to see how it's going to end. Please don't cut Pamela Alden's show off. Please. It was so horrible for me to think that. I'm a survivor myself. I can't help it, but...
She survived.
Pamela Alden, I love her. I don't think she's guilty, and I don't think she should be punished. And,
Well, that's just it. it's not very cut and dry,
like,
all this stuff.
She's considered guilty by proxy on some level.
Yeah. Did she speak up about Kevin Spacey?
No, Louis C.K. She's.
I'm sorry about.
She did.
What'd she say?
She had no idea. She's fucking horrified. She wants everyone to leave her and her family alone for a while they sit around and contemplate.
What did she say that she had seen? You know.
No, she had no idea.
C.K.'s.
She didn't.
Penis.
She was unawares. And
oh.
It was a very female empowering show. And he was one of the co-writers on it, too. So.
Does that say on the screen that she's 5 feet?
She's a tiny little thing. She's wee.
Oh, wow.
She's Spitfire.
Hmm. Maybe she couldn't see Louis C.K. penis because she was too small.
Oh, God. It's probably at eye level. He's so tall. His little gender cock. Oh,
do you think, though, that he, just for instance, would be able to make a comeback? I think he could.
I absolutely think he could, but I think it's going to take at least 5 or 7 years.
Really?
To fully recover.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, you'd have to time it right.
It's pretty... It's just... He had so much power when the scandal broke.
Right.
And what he did was so wildly inappropriate. Also super stupid sounding and embarrassing.
But do you think it was... Listen, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Like I said, I've...
But do you think it was just...
I've seen jerk off in front of me.
Well,
I didn't lose my dreams, but at the same time, I don't condone what he did.
Well, I don't remember the exact circumstances, but what did these women, I mean, what was their relationship with him? Did they have a lot to, lose if they wouldn't look at his penis? Or wouldn't watch him masturbate?
They felt that way at the time, like they were all up and coming comedians, mm-hmm. or people working in the industry. Mm. Basic scenario, you walk into an office for a meeting, the guy whips his dick out.
That'd be weird.
Starts off in front of you.
That'd be weird.
And you're like, hey, I don't know how I feel about this. Oh, just don't worry, I'm almost done. And then
that's strange.
It would be violating, absolutely.
Yeah. Would it be hot in any way?
What?
Would it be hot in any way?
I would just laugh and send him a bill.
Send him a bill.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, all right. Okay,
here's
I'll play
my invoice
fucking game,
for your
weirdo.
Masturbation.
Do your fucking
antics.
Thing. Stay the fuck over there. Do your thing. All right, that's cute. Okay, that's funny. Have a nice day, and here's the bill. You owe me $500. It's asshole tax. But I guess if I was in a position where, all jokes aside, genuinely worried about job safety, my future in the industry, that would definitely put a damper on
I hear you.
The power play there is why it's so bad.
Yeah.
Because he's in such a powerful position. It's not like it's your boss at McDonald's and you tell him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Have you ever been harassed sexually at work?
No. But I don't feel there's any experiences where I've had sexual experiences at jobs
I had a
or circumstances. But I felt like it was never anything I didn't kind of enjoy.
Right.
It's so different from the gay world in many
it
ways.
Is.
It really is.
You don't have the male-female dynamic.
No. And a lot of... lot of like groping and sexual sort of
slap on the ass.
Yeah, stuff is like considered A-okay. And actually, I hope it continues to be, but but there might be a little more sensitivity now to that stuff. But most of it, it's on an equal playing field,
I walked out of the job once because the guy, the boss, creepy old dude, was spying on me taking a piss in the bathroom, in the ladies' room.
Oh, no. Through a hole?
No, I could see him fucking through the crack. And I kicked the door open and let him have it. And
what was your job? What was the job?
I'm afraid to say on the air, you might know.
Oh.
I was working for an S&M-themed restaurant.
The one on 23rd?
Asian man that was...
Not someone you worked with.
My boss.
Not the cook.
No.
Alright, don't say no more. I know who you're talking about.
You get where I'm going. Anyway, that was one job where I did quit. It's funny though, they reopened another location.
Yes.
In the East Village, and then I got hired back.
You did.
It was under different ownership. Yeah. So I continued working there but under different ownership.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes.
I just like the fact that we can say that there used to be an S&M themed restaurant in Manhattan.
I know, I miss it. I ended up being their tarot card reader for a number of years.
And just like, it, I mean, it sounds so like refreshingly, you know, sexy compared to today's bland street scene, you know, or like God, landscape, you know?
It was very pure. Mm-hmm. The waitresses could be rude as fuck. It was their job. They would walk over and terrorize the dominatrixes, the clientele, and all the busboys were submissives with collars or corsets. You could pay to spank one of them for $20.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny. The owner of that restaurant, I don't want to name too many names, was, I know that she was thinking.
Oh, the other owner, the one I ended up working for, yes.
Male or female?
Female. The first one was this old dude.
No.
Different. Yeah. No.
She was thinking of opening that space as a little people themed restaurant.
Oh my God.
Would that be hilarious? Listen, I'm not trying to.
You couldn't get away with that today.
No. And I'm not trying to say that that would be demeaning of little people. It actually might be very empowering.
Empowering.
But
if you let them come up with a lot of the ideas.
But I wonder if you could even get away with that, like hiring only little people.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it would be kind of a great idea. Nothing. I mean, it would be like I said, it'd be great to have like little people in our lives,
right?
You know, serving big dishes.
Yeah.
And they'd look even bigger as they were carrying them.
Right. Absolutely.
So serving we would think dishes. That we're getting really large sized meals.
And before we go out, where can we find you?
Well, like I mentioned, Friday and Saturdays, I'm at Les Poissons Rouges hosting bingo. And it's early. Happy hour, 6:30 to 7:30.
Yes.
Games, 7:30 to 9:30. And I recommend getting there early for good seats and half-price drinks or discounted drinks. And then, you know, you
your
can check.
Website?
Well, lindasimpson.org is my website.
Sweet.
And then I'm more active, though, on Instagram and Facebook. Both Linda Simpson. You can find me easily. You know?
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much, Velocity, for having me.
My pleasure. And here's to Donna Summer.
Yeah.
Grab the crystal.
Yes. Partail. A little sound effect.
Sure.